Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you.
Welcome back. Yes, it's part two of Brad Friedel. Honestly, the fun, the quality, his wit, and how engaging a conversationalist he is, we could have had parts 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, up to 10, no problem. But in this section, we go into a little bit more depth about the art of being a goalkeeper. Who gives you the shivers, the nightmares? We get more understanding of what life was like as somebody who probably had a second birth in terms of football at Spurs. But we ask him maybe more pointed questions than in part one, where, for example, I promise you that you will never have heard a more explicit explanation of some of the vile moments as a goalkeeper that you can suffer. For example, if you go to play away in Costa Rica with your national team. Bags of human product is my way of explaining that this is a slight parental advisory episode. We're going to be speaking about what it was like to face both, I don't know, people like Bergkamp and Thierry Henry and Alan Shearer. Thanks for being there. Enjoy Brad Friedel. I wanted to ask you about learning Olympic values by osmosis, because the UCLA time where you are in the company of Olympians doing other things, therefore not just in their elite nests, but out doing something that entertains them, and you're watching their values. You played spectacularly well in two big Olympic games, and learned a lot, I think, from particularly maybe the younger experience in Barcelona, particularly maybe once you'd performed valiantly in the group and been knocked out. I wanted to ask you about that, but frankly, I have to ask you about goalkeeping and the psychology of becoming better with each passing year, but also at Galatasaray, they were throwing so much coins at you that, you know, effectively you could have probably retired on that. When you're a goalkeeper, it is irrespective of being now maybe more than when you were playing. It's not 10 men and a goalkeeper, it's 11 men. Maybe you always felt treated like 11 men. Presumably you always acted that way. But I still always think about, you need to be mulishly stubborn to be a goalkeeper. There's you and the three posts. There's people forget about bashing your body up all the time, not just with the boots of opponents, but down onto the ground, the damage you do there all the time. but also the psychological weight of people looking at you and relying on you and being judged differently from a manager, being judged differently from a chairman, and being judged differently from every other one of your teammates. That changes a man's mind, and it needs a gigantic personality, I believe.
Your mistakes generally lead to a goal against. That's number one. So straight away when you... The way that I like live my time in between games was I trained like a crazy man. I was always really fit. I loved it. I really did. I would do the running with the outfield players, you know, until I got to, you know, really old. I loved being in the gym. I loved doing yoga. I loved all of that. And it relaxed me, to be honest with you. It didn't make me more intense. It relaxed me through the week. So then when you got in between the sticks in a game, you were mentally ready for everything. Because that's where any of the anxiety or the stress or that you know, would creep in. And you would have this a lot more stress as a younger goalkeeper than an older goalkeeper. There's no doubt. It's funny. I always put it like when you're young, you have the blinkers on. All you can see is in front of you. And you hear all the noise around you. And it's like you make that first great save and the blinkers go back a little bit and the game like widens up and everything lightens up. The first back pass to you and you slip and it closes like that. And the noise gets louder. When you get older, it's easy. And what I found when I got to like 33, 34, 35 is you see the similar supporters at the grounds that you go and play. The season ticket holders, so they can start to have banter and they start to respect you because you've been there so long. You know, like I remember one at Southampton, there was a supporter who used to sit when you came out to the right at Southampton down at St. Mary's, and he was always, if you're looking at the goal, to the left about two rows up, and he'd become a bit portly as time went on. You know, so there was, I'd made a save in a game and the ball, or no, shot went wide, but I had it covered and the ball went wide and I was going back to pick it up and he was like, and I think I was probably 37 at the time. And he goes, "You still playing?" And I was like, "You put on some timber though, haven't you, over the years?" You know, and the supporters laughed and he laughed. And it was like, so, and then all that, I couldn't have done that when I was younger, because I was, it was all like, I got to prove myself. I got to do this. And if I don't prove myself, and you know, and I'm an American over here, and I get dealt, there's even another standard on top of it that I have to prove to people. And you know, I became obsessively superstitious when I was gaining the respect of, you know, my time at, especially my first probably 4 or 5 years at Blackburn, like crazily superstitious. And it wasn't, it actually wasn't until I spoke to Martin Keown once, and he was crazy superstitious. And I was like, as like it gets to a point where it like overtakes your, you know, that from the day before a game to the end of the game, it's like a ball of stress that, you know, if you don't eat this, if you don't go there, if you don't drive in that car, if you don't go this way.
Brad, isn't that an addiction?
Yeah, it's like, and so what Martin Keown said, he goes, "I was like that." He goes, "And what I ended up saying to myself, my superstition now is if I'm ever superstitious, then, you know, it's all going to go to shit." You know, and it became less like once I knew, like, I knew that I was doing pretty well. What I prided myself looking back on it, not while I was doing it, was I was consistent. I may not have been the best shot stopper in the league, you know, on any given year, but I was usually in the top three or four. Like, you know, and every year, you know, kind of like, you know, I wouldn't have been the best at catching crosses, but I wouldn't have been bad. I tried to be consistent throughout the time. And I think that's why I was able to play and be a starter with so many different managers, because they could go, there's the consistency. So to get to your point, people are throwing coins at you. I mean, I even had a lawn dart thrown at me at the cup final in the Fener, from a Fenerbahce supporter. I mean, the thing was large, landed about like 6-8 feet away from me. You know, playing in Costa Rica, Saprissa Stadium, they fill bags of piss, big bags of piss, and they throw it, and they had like the chicken wire around the stadium, and it would hit and it'd splatter all over you. I remember in Costa Rica as well, I would go down to pick up a ball for a goal kick, and I must have gotten spit on 50 times. The fans and I'm the one that got booked because I went to the referee. I said, "Look at my kit," and he's like, "You're wasting time." And we were losing 1-0. I was like, "How am I wasting time?" I was like, "You're booking me." And then at halftime, he goes, "I booked you because if I do it the opposite way, we could incite a riot." I said, "I am being spit on. I'm having piss thrown on me, and you're booking me." My point is, as a goalkeeper, no matter what you're feeling inside, the outside can't look like that. And you learn how to deal with that. So the best goalkeepers in the world, for me, are the ones where the mistake doesn't bother them, because we all make them. And it doesn't matter if you're a Neuer, you know, or levels below, everyone makes a mistake. After the mistake, you have to learn to calm it down. And if you can't, you will never be one of the most successful goalkeepers.
Okay, so you saying that, you know, I've got goosebumps because I recognize the art. I understand that the thing you are talking about separates great human beings from other human beings, not just footballers. And it makes sense. It clicks. So fine. And we knew coming into this that you were articulate, and I'd imagine you'd be a superb teacher, superb coach. But saying all these things, knowing that truth, and achieving it inside this mad machine that we're all given up top, achieving that you've just explained so articulately, that's not easy. How did you do it?
You have to have a talent. As a sportsman or woman, like, you know, you mentioned UCLA. I mean, at one time, and this is no bullshit, like I had Carl Lewis lifting weights on my right and Jackie Joyner cursing on my left. Well, yeah, they could lift a lot of weights, and yeah, they were coached by the best. They're good athletes. Just without a weight, they were good athletes, right? You know, so you have to have the tools to it as well. The best answer, Graham, is there's two to it. One is hard work. I've never seen. I'll just use his name again because his free kicks were stunningly accurate. David Beckham didn't get good at free kicks because he went home at 11 o'clock every day. Georgie Hadji, who I was with for a short time at Galatasaray, was not good at free kicks because he went home at 11:30 every day. Repetition. So the hard work and determination, all that stuff, you have to have that with your talent. But the second answer, Graham, is I don't know the answer. It happens. And people are, what do you mean it happens? This is how it happens. I start with under-7 football, and I make the next team. Okay, natural. Now I'm on the under-9s. Then we have tryouts again when I'm 10. You know, when you're 10, and I make the under-11s. Then I get asked to play basketball, and I go and I try out, and I've never been coached. Yet you made that team. Okay, you ask me how? Don't know. I'm a young kid. Talent. Okay. It's just talent. Now you go up, now you start getting coached. Right? And if a coach ever told me, the American football coach told me I'd never amount to anything in my life if I didn't play American football. It was in the same season as soccer. So for me, and the way that my attitude is, I was like, instead of going home and going, "Oh, Mom, I think I have to play American football," I walked out and I said, "I'm going to play my football," you know, and that's where it was, you know. And I think you used the word stubborn. I'm stubborn as can be. And I think my stubbornness hurt a couple times as well. You know, like I think I probably would have started in the 1994 World Cup if I had signed for Adidas.
Ahead of Miola.
Yeah, but he signed for Adidas. I was offered the contract first, and I was told by many sources that, like, why didn't you sign? Well, here's the reason that I didn't sign. my deal with Sandico and Reebok was paying like 300 grand a year and Adidas offered me 25 grand a year. So it wasn't like 25 and 30. It was a big difference, right? Now, I'm just not the political guy to play that game. You said why I was owned by Milan Mandarich, because I told US Soccer the same thing. I am not signing, you're a federation. I'm not signing a contract with you on a month-to-month basis, so you own my rights. You're a federation. So Milan took it over. And then and it was the best thing that I did, because I got to Europe shortly after that. You're asking how do you do it? You know, the coaching, you go to the big clubs and the coaches can help you. And people say this, and when I coach young children, I try to ask them, how did you do that? How did you do that? Because I used to jump on boxes, you know, up here at UCLA, you know, with all the NFL guys and stuff like that. How do you walk out at Wembley and not be nervous? I don't know. And I'm sorry, I can't answer it like better than that. Like, am I just reassured in myself that I was good? I don't know, because inside I had these superstitions. I was just as nervous as somebody else, you know, but like once I got over the white line, so to speak, it was all just seemed normal.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers, and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It feels to me as if, you know, I'm a believer, so I'm glad that God blessed you with that mix of abilities. But it's clear that without going back to it from, you know, you've only told us about your grandparents through parents, but upbringing, attitude, genes, I think we can understand where you got there. But I love and one day we'll come back to this thing that they now talk about, the goldfish memory, whereby, certainly in golfers, but in keepers too, when you talk about that, if you can just goldfish it and go, okay, that's gone. I can't do that over certain arguments with people, or if I've used a word badly on television, and it'll live with me and drive me crazy sometimes for days or weeks, or okay, sometimes for hours. But that ability to erase something where you've made a mistake, or you know you've done something wrong or let yourself down, and be as good as you should be in 5 minutes or 5 seconds or 50 minutes or a day later. I think that's a huge part of success in both life and sport. But we're running down the clock, and so out of respect, I want to say sorry to Brian Johnson and Andrew Pod. Brian was very clear you were better than both your competitors at Liverpool. Andrew wanted to know about the difference between a club at Liverpool and Blackburn and how much he he thought you were amazing at Blackburn. We've talked a little bit about World Cups, and Michael English was talking about, I think Michael got the closest to his answers. But I want to finish with two quick ones. This one is simple and much more fun. Our sponsors, Bet365, want to know about which is the opposition player across your career that you most dislike coming up against, where you're like, superstition or not, it's this guy. He's got something on me. Was there one?
Sheer. This guy, man, like, I was a goalkeeper that I communicated a lot. And I tried to, especially at Blackburn at times, and we had good teams, by the way. Blackburn, I mean, to touch on that question, Blackburn was run by a different board. We were good. We had very, very formidable teams back then with Graham Souness and Mark Hughes at the helm. So, you know, very rarely would we go into a game thinking that we were going to lose no matter where we were playing. But every now and again, you would play the great Arsenal team or the great, you know, the great Man United team. And yeah, and you were up against it, of course. But many teams across Europe would have been up against it. You know, it was so. Anyways, but Alan Shearer, he was at Newcastle, and there were times where the Newcastle side wasn't great. But I would scan the field, and I knew he, you know, at certain moments, okay, Shearer's going to be making his run across, and he's going to get to that near post. I know he's going to be there. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to make sure I'm positioned there. And before I know it, ball's behind me. At that time, I was in my early 30s, so, you know, I was calm, and I could get pictures in my head. You're playing Arsenal. The other one that I would put in that is Dennis Bergkamp. So those were probably the two. And Dennis, I'd have to look. I'm sure he scored a goal or something on me, but it was his orchestration of what was happening. And I would try to communicate to stop it. And the second, like, you would, for a 5-minute spell, you'd like shut him down. He was so clever, and he used to then find the space somewhere else. And then I would see Thierry Henry drifting off, and I just knew that I'm facing a one-on-one with Henry on my right-hand side. I can't cheat to go to to my far post, because then I'll whip it to the near post. I'm going to have to stand my ground, and if he hits it accurately, it's a goal, because I won't be able to save it from this angle. Like, it was maddening. You know, and so you, what I had to try to do, and it's so much so hard for anyone to stop Henri when he was in his heyday. But it was Bergkamp for me that was orchestrating it. Henri was finishing it off, you know, and it was just, it was so hard to stop him from getting in his spaces. And then with Shearer, he could score all different ways. He was friends with a good friend of mine, you know, and he used to have banter off the field before we were playing, like, just indirectly. I never like text. I don't even have Alan's number or anything, but we would like have banter, like, there's no way I'm letting him, you know, have a near post goal this time. Bam, goal, two goals, you know. And I'm thinking, like, whereas I think Michael Owen did an interview, like, he whenever he was on a breakaway with me, he never scored. Like, I had his number, maybe because I faced so many shots from him in training and I just knew it. With Alan, I would be like, I'd like wake up in the morning, no way Alan Shearer is scoring on me today. And then even when we won a game 3-2, Alan Shearer too.
Amongst those talents you mentioned, he had the, because he's not a big guy. And all right, his thigh muscles are in good shape, but he had the sweetest connection with the football in order to generate power for kilo to force.
People ask, like, you know, the greatest finishers. Actually, put it this way. John McDermott asked me when I was at Tottenham, what's Harry Kane like, really? And because I was doing my coaching and Harry was with the academy and then coming up. And I said, he has a backlift and a whip like Fowler and power of Shearer. And John McDermott looked at me, he goes, what are you smoking? And I was like, I know I'm old. You know, I know I'm old there, but I'm still training with the first team and I'm still facing shots from everyone. I said, I'm finding it really difficult, John, to ever stop Harry Kane's shots. And if I do save them, I'm not holding them. I'm not even close to holding them. I'm just happy to get something on it.
Wow.
And he was like, really? And then Robbie, saw him, he was doing his badges. I saw him at St. George's Park. And he said, Harry Kane, real deal? I said, phenomenal, Robbie. You know, like, I said, you know how your backlift was nothing? Because that's what Robbie was the best at.
And just so that listeners understand, the one of the keys for a keeper there is the backlift is short. You get very little time to either read it or check whether your positioning's right.
We usually take like a little hop, you know, sometimes forward, back, or our feet are, you know, at some stage you have to get light on your feet before you can push off and power. He goes, so a trigger on a lot of players, when they lift up that great big back lift, you can take your little hop and then you're ready. What you don't count for is the real short ones. And Harry Kane's, Alan Shearer's, Robbie Fowler's, the real short back lifts. And you're in the air as the ball's leaving their foot. So then you have to come down and then go and you're dead. And on top of that, with the three that I just mentioned, their accuracy was so good. That, you know, the Van Nistelrooy's as well. You know, he had a little bit more of a windup, but his accuracy on his finishing, you know, right in the corner. Like, and if you ever slipped that little bit, if you ever had, you know, if you ever just on your heels a little bit, goal.
The last one is important to me because we started this exercise wanting to hear from you. And I'd like to see you as involved and satisfied either in the development of US football or back in the UK. I'd like to see the best Brad Friedel from 50 onwards, as we saw in his professional career across all the countries in which he played. What would be the things, Brad, that if you could, if I could open the box and give it to you, that would satisfy you, say, for the next 10 years of your professional work, that would give you the pleasure and professional satisfaction to the max?
I'd love to be a, and I think I've educated myself enough on this, a sporting director.
Ah, brilliant.
Since I've retired, I've done everything, always involved in football, but from the punditry side to the head coach of the youth national side, the head coach of a senior team, own and operate the U.S. office for promo sport, and I'm really enjoying the agency work. You know, and everything, now that I've done the last 2 years, a lot of work on the business side of football, that would be outstanding. And one of the things, like I really feel for Nuno right now, I do, and it did not work out for him, no doubt. And you can't lose 5 games out of 10, and you know, when you're in the hot, when you're at a club like a Tottenham, but you could tell now, and you see the quotes that come out, that he was never their guy anyways. I had a real bitter time, and it was the unhappiest that I'd ever been in my life, my last sort of 6 months as a head coach at New England. When you're not given sort of the keys to the castle to do what is needed, it's really hard to succeed. Going into the head coaching again, I'm not so sure that would please me, because if I ever saw a sight of what went on, you know, it's very hard to govern what's above you sometimes. Below you is pretty simple, but it's what someone like myself is very much educated for. What's above you, when you can't control it, it's such an unknown, and it's so unstable, and it's so frustrating that, you know, that I don't think if you said 10 years, would you want to do that? I don't think it is, because the constantly looking over your shoulder and the constant, like if it was only the players that you'd have to deal with, fantastic.
The phrase managing upwards now is used a lot, and there are very few managers who are good at it. Fergie in his way was, but Ancelotti's very good because he came through under Berlusconi. But there are a few managers who are good at managing upwards, and it's an extra task that a successful coach manager doesn't really need to have to do. There's such a universe of work and difficulties and unpredictable things about managing a group of players and then managing matches, that to manage up is a drain on resources. But unfortunately, it's now essential.
You have to do it. So, like, I would, you're saying, like, if you gave you a box, like, I would rather be the guy that's hiring the guy, but knowing in my mind that I want continuity. You know, like, but that would be somebody that's even above me giving me the keys to, you know, and giving me the responsibilities and the trust to run it properly. You give me the budget, we'll run it, you know, and because the when you go into these projects and then you see 6 months fired, I mean, in Spain, I mean, sometimes it's crazy. Three games, yep. You're out. Italy,
yep.
Four games and you're out. And you're thinking, like, do you even, have you even seen one training session, but in one meeting? Like, it's strange. It's a very bizarre business sometimes when you see it, the coaching side of it.
My take on this, Brad, is as we call a halt to this session, is that my understanding is that apart from bringing excellence and intelligence and experience into a sporting director of football role, I can fully imagine you, over a period of time at the right club, imbuing a culture around a club, its attitudes, its decisions, the training ground, the employees beyond that. And I think the great clubs that I've witnessed during my life have that. Somebody who isn't simply, he or she isn't simply good at their job, but generates a cultural change and unity, teaches well, shows well, and that becomes something that's identifiable about the club, from its decision-making to its attitudes to its fans, buying, selling, playing, and hopefully winning. I wish I had that box to open for you. I hope I'll see it coming true soon. It occurs to me that Newcastle don't have one of those just yet.
That's a strange, not a strange purchase. Buying Newcastle's not a strange purchase, but the position that they're in, because they could be they could very well be the richest club in the world that is playing in the Championship.
Right now, they're in jeopardy.
Yeah, well, it's hard. Like, people are like, oh, we're rich, we're going to have all this money. January windows are hard to get your players in. Like, it's not easy. And they might find themselves, you know, 6-8 points adrift before they start getting themselves in. And I don't know. Like, it's not a – just because they got money now, it's not a foregone conclusion. They're staying in the league.
The clock is ticking, and as in a series that I never watched, but I know the phrase is famous, winter is coming. I believe that's a Game of Thrones quote, winter is coming. But for Newcastle, the clock is ticking and winter is coming in a metaphorical sense. Brad, I can't describe how enjoyable it is listening to somebody of your talent explain things like you did there. The listeners are going to feel identically. We owe you a great debt if these guys, or if I, my producers, listeners, if I can do you a turn in some way or another, we will. And our listeners will undoubtedly, when we put this out, tell you what a first-class experience that was. Just pure joy. Thank you for being so generous with your time and your stories. And Godspeed, Brad Friedel.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Take care of yourself, and hopefully we'll cross paths soon.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.